It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We're off and running indeed for this, the 16th day of October, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick out a screen name and a password and jump into the chat room. It's free. It's easy. It's a lot of fun. It's a madcap, merry, multimedia, wacky, zany, real-time extravaganza that happens during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We'll have to change that to Standard Time next month, but you know what I mean. So, there we go. Pick yourself out a screen name and password. You will be immediately greeted by early arriver Anatole and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. It must be nicer in Northern California right now than it is here in central West Virginia. Because it has been gray and dreary and cold. Had to run over to the pharmacy earlier today, and it was 44 degrees Fahrenheit. And, yeah, I mean, I'll be okay with it when we're in the dead of winter. It's just these early days of getting used to it that kind of make me want to hoot like a barn owl. So, yeah. And a quick program note, I had anticipated possibly being gone Friday evening for Bridge Day, the pre-Bridge Day festivities. But the fact of the matter is, I can't stand it. It's going to be kind of crummy. And so I figure I'll just be right here, not getting rained on in the studio for Friday on the front porch. So don't everybody just, belay that previous remark about no program on Friday for Friday on the front porch. I'll be here. Sparky, we'll celebrate Sparky's birthday online there in the chat room. But, you know, because we're friends and everything, I promise not to sing. Okay? Okay. So that's all squared away now. Let's see. We have thanks to send out at the beginning of the program, as we always do. We have subscribers to thank. Thank you very, very kindly indeed to Glenn in New York and to our buddy Reinhard over on the Virginia coast. And thanks to Timothy in Arizona. Thank you very much for your partial sponsorship of this program and partially, being part of the effort that knocks out about a week's worth of the programming needs here. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks as well go out to John. Thank you, John. John jumped in right before the program started, and so that means that our fundraising goal, we pulled up about $25 short last night, but our fundraising goal would have been $225, but it's $215 now. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly. That's, you know, that's how we get it done. So, you know, we need 21 people. We'll just wipe out that five. We need 21 people at $10 a piece. And we've got three subscribers on this day. If we could get some brand new subscribers to join Timothy and Reinhard and and Glenn. That would be awesome. The PayPal button, of course, once you click it, there's a little box you can check that says make this happen every month, whatever. But that's how we keep the program on the air. That's why you don't have to hear anybody pitching, you know, olive oil extracts for weight loss or telegenic mind control or any of that silly horse shit, because y'all keep the program on the air. So thanks in advance. Hopefully we will knock down the fundraising goal tonight and tomorrow night, and finish with bill paying at the end of the week, and that'll be just freaking awesome. So over there, you know, and of course, if you'd like to be a Patreon subscriber, that's cool too. There's a Patreon link at headon.live as well. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I don't think I did that part yet. Well, now I have. So it is the 16th day of October, falls upon a Tuesday. That means it's Titanic Tuesday here. Here at the Horn. You may recall Titanic Tuesday is named for something our buddy Jim, whom we heard from last week, and I was glad to hear from Jim and know that he is making his recovery. Titanic Tuesday is named for something he heard on terrestrial radio over in America's fifth smallest radio market back in the bad old days, when the morning monotone, Steve, took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who asked him a trenchant question about West Virginia's geology. Namely, and to wit, Steve, why come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks down when you go underground in West Virginia? Because we ain't nowhere near the sea. Now, remember, this was a genius who once upon a time had explained to his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers that the New River flows south, just like the Monongahela River flows south. Neither does. They both flow north, but oh well. But the most important thing is that Steve, the magical monotone, was rock solid certain in his ignorance. So when the question was put to him, he said, "Well, caller." That's really too expressive. "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah, learned about those when I was studying in the geology department up there at Harvard on the Mon in my salad days, my Halcon days. Walked down the hill to the sounds of the Calliope piping along. Yeah, Titanic plates. Uh-huh. Still no word on the Titanic spice pestle and spice mortar. A lot of stuff went down there in the North Atlantic. Yeah. But we celebrate right-wing, white-wing, Titanic intellect on Tuesdays here. And today is no different. So, consequently, let's go over and have a look at a race in Michigan. Because this is more than a little bit fascinating. So, up in Michigan, Debbie Stabenow is running for re-election to the Senate as a Democrat. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty good for her. That's not one of those races you hear about being a toss-up it doesn't have the horse race panache of, say, the race between Joe Manchin and that pill pushing guy. No, she's being challenged by a guy by the name of John James. And if you're not inside Michigan, you probably never heard of him. And if you are inside Michigan, you may not have heard from him or of him. But like all Republican politicians, they've got a horse gagging ton of dark money and no, white money. Thank you, Alexander. And Citizens United money and so they, you know, commercials, ads, right? Well, this is, he had a tight, his campaign, John James did, had a Titanic moment. Now, John James is an African-American man. He's one of those folks that periodically gets recruited by the white Republican power structure to provide a sort of panache of, not panache, but a patina there. That's the word. A patina of racial equity or diversity inside what is otherwise a really, really white, bleached white, starched white, white sheet kind of party. So they worked up a TV ad. And 2 weeks ago, the TV ad started running in various Michigan markets. And of course, it being a Michigan ad, there was talk of the problems that Michigan has faced over the last decade or so as the state, deals with the economic realities of mono economies that collapse. So, let's see if we can get this thing to roll. Yeah, here it is. Okay. It features, the ad does, pictures of things that were once neighborhoods and now look like they're on the way to becoming some sort of archaeological ruins, burned out houses, empty schoolrooms, that sort of thing.
We've got to do better than this. Look around. Blighted neighborhoods, failing schools, forgotten veterans. It's disgraceful.
Okay, so when they get to the failing schools part, somebody who is apparently into detail started looking at the stuff that was hanging on the walls. Well, guess what? It's not a Michigan school. Turns out it's stock footage. And there's a bulletin board on the wall. And as you would expect in a school, it's got papers tacked to it. But then some curious person zoomed in. And it's kind of obvious, really, if you're looking at it, at the video. I realize this is radio, but, you know, you can go and find it. As you're looking at the screen, to the left, son of a gun, in this failing Michigan school. And by the way, Debbie Stabenow doesn't have much to do with the schools in Michigan. That would have a lot more to do with Republican Governor Rick Snyder. But I digress. Over on the bulletin board on the left, with papers printed, tacked all over it, son of a gun, there's a swastika. Because I remember years ago when Louis Black, the brilliant comedian, pointed out that Republicans have something that he referred to as Nazi Tourette's. Yeah, they just couldn't help themselves. And this is, you know, this is classic when it comes to a Republican, because, well, they couldn't go into an actual school inside Michigan and take a picture down the hallways. No, they just went out and bought some stock footage. Yeah. just a photograph. Because why not? And nobody happened to notice, because it's just a picture, okay? So somebody producing the ad got that thing and went well, you know, what's a swastika here and there, right? So last night, candidate James had himself a debate against Debbie Stabenow. And sometime along in there, somebody noticed the swastika. Yeah. And after the debate, at a sort of al fresco press conference, Mr. James tried to get serious and all earnest and everything, and he said, "I need to fess up and admit this was a terrible error on our part. We should have caught this error, and we didn't. And there's no excuse. I'm responsible for everything that our team does and fails to do. And I will do everything in my power to make sure this never, ever happens again." Because, you know, it really needs to only happen once. It's kind of like almost you could swear it's out of the Republican playbook. Like down in Florida, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis. He only had to say monkey this up once. And that bell, having been rung, could not be unrung. Ron Up Monkey DeSantis. Second reference, Ron DeClantis. Because then the Klan jumped in on Ron DeSantis' behalf. Because Republican politics. Because, you know what, there's no voter too odious for a Republican. A Republican candidate will gladly take the votes of the Klan, the White Citizens Council, the Nazi Party, the Proud Boys, the Stormfronters, the skinheads, because they all count. You ever had change counted back to you at a checkout line, and you'll get some really ratty ass looking dollar bill? Looks like probably needs to be pulled from circulation. It's been through the washer a few times. It's wadded up, nasty and crinkly and stuff. And either you or the other person, the cashier, will say, "Yeah, well, it spends." Well, that's kind of how it is with Nazi sympathizer votes in the Republican Party. Hey, there's not a little swastika next to that vote. It gets counted just like all the other votes. So Republicans actually need them. And so maybe you dog whistle a swastika into an ad from a stock photo and just, oopsie, there you go. And then you say, "I will do everything in my power to make sure this never, ever happens again." Because when you're dealing with Republicans and the white wing, it only needs to happen once. And so it's run all over Michigan. But now, it's been pulled from YouTube. Lonnie Scott is the executive director of Progress Michigan. Said of John James's campaign, "His team is either too lazy to spot check their ads, or they're willfully pushing out this type of imagery. Either way, it's a problem and shows James's lack of preparedness for the United States Senate." Oh, now, Mr. Scott. Have you looked at who's in the United States Senate lately? No? Yes? If he's a Republican, it shows that he's perfectly primed to go to the Senate of the United States. because the Republican majority, well, they understand a single ding of a bell like that. Case in point, how many stories have you seen in the course of the last, 72 hours? Okay, let's be generous, 96 hours. How many stories have you seen in the last 96 hours of some Republican getting all red in the face saying, God damn it, what happened in New York with the Proud Boys and I will never set foot inside the Metropolitan Republican Club of New York City ever again. So help me, Himmler, or God. Zero, right? I haven't seen any. And so by way of further excuse, candidate John James, Republican nominee for Senate in Michigan, said, I was taught by excellent leaders, the best of which being my mom and dad, to do the right thing, even when it's hard. Time out. Jack, okay, time out. Okay. Goddess of irony. She'll get you. She got John James. The issue is pulling an ad that contains a swastika in it. John James opened his mouth and admitted that pulling the ad with the swastika in it was hard. He said it. Yeah. I was taught by excellent leaders, the best of which being my mom and dad, to do the right thing, even when it's hard. And it's so hard. It's so hard to pull an effective ad that's drawing the Nazis and the white supremacists to my campaign, even though I'm a man of color. It's hard to do that because, well, now they're going to think I'm some sissy that's been bullied into taking the swastikas out of my ads. God damn it. And then by way of an excuse, yeah, well, you know, this ad's already being phased out nationally. And we're putting out a new ad. In the new ad, we talk about my dad, who grew up in the Jim Crow South. And I'm looking at the quote here from the Associated Press, and I'm wondering if this is an art of word-knowing moment. He says, but he preserved. Now, is this just something that the folks with the blue pencils over at the AP missed? Or did he really say preserved? I'm thinking he meant, but he persevered and he taught me faith, service, and love of country. Now, here's the thing. John James is trying to run away from Donald Trump right now. A lot of candidates in the Midwest Donnie, don't come here, man. No, it's okay. That's great. No, you're busy. I'd like to keep my job. But the problem is John James was endorsed right after he won the primary. He was endorsed by Julius Geezer. But and Julius Geezer's approval rating in Michigan is, you know, down in the toilet. But back during the salad days, John James said, I support Donald Trump 2,000%. So, but, you know, Brother Deacon Asus is, he's right, though. It's hard to pull the Nazi theme, Dad. It'll cost him Nazi votes. And that's the whole thing I keep trying to tell people. There are more Nazis and Nazi sympathizers and Klansmen and skinhead and Klan sympathizers and casual white supremacists in this country than we dare to even consider. And that's why we've got what we've got, because we did not consider it. We pretended that we were in some sort of era where that was all by the boards, but it ain't. Subject line, swastika. Lee in New York says, stop telling candidates to not have swastikas in their ads, Bob. We need a good stop telling every night. Right up there with the obligatory Star Trek reference. Lee says, how are they supposed to reach their base? Duh, exactly. But then John James jumped right up on the cross and got busy nailing. This is also an indication of how low people are willing to go to take a message like this and to imply that a combat veteran, somebody who would put his life on the line for American values, doesn't belong to one party or the other, but belongs to Americans. I love everyone, and I denounce hatred and bigotry in all its forms, but this is also an indication that our message is working. Wait, how low people are willing to go? Is he saying that some sneaky little liberal crept in and put the swastika in the picture, in the ad that he approved? You remember that line. Hi, I'm John James, and I approve this message. Well, that means you actually approved the swastika on the board in your ad, you titanic genius, you. And I'm sure there is not a single white supremacist in the entire United States military, not one, except for the fact that there apparently are, by any number of metrics. And still up on the cross and nailing away, John James said, "Oh, this shows that Debbie Stabenow and I will say and do anything to get reelected." Okay. She'll say and do anything, up to and including pointing out that, well, you're dog whistling to the fucking Nazis with your own advertising, Mr. James. Yeah, she'll say and do anything. You might be interested in knowing that apparently, as of the latest polling, with 20-some-odd days to go before the election, he's chasing Debbie Stabenow by about 16 points. Meanwhile, note coming in from Jack in Shreveport, subject line, Michigan dude. Black Republican? That makes me ask if he's a religious nutter. Is he? I don't know enough to be able to answer that question, Jack, but it kind of goes with the territory, doesn't it? He's identified as a businessman and military veteran. And then he has the nerve to use the phrase, he says, I believe America is still worth fighting for. Despite America's challenge, we shall overcome. Bub, you do not want to walk into the Republican caucus of the United States Senate whistling any "We Shall Overcome." Because there's a whole bunch of Republican senators that would probably take that as fighting words. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to get interestinger and interestinger as we move along. Oh, and by the way, I'm trying to keep count. What are we, 11 years and 350? Yeah, 11 years and 355 days, depends on how you count it, from the break point where, you know, everything begins to fall apart. We got 11 years and 355 days to sort out how we're going to live in a post-carbon world. Not that, you know, Bob, stop telling us how to watch TV. No, I'm not doing that. But just maybe make a note, put it on a sticky, and stick it on the corner of, say, your TV or your computer monitor, and say, did anybody do any climate change stories today? And maybe check around a little bit. No, I don't mean going over to Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda. They're not going to do it except to say that it's not real. And besides, it'll make your brains turn to mush, and who wants that? But you get the idea. Because I can't tell you the number of times I heard today, well, it's 22 days, 26 days, I don't know how many, 20-something days. Hey, what is it? Okay, so 6 and 16 and 16. 20, okay, so like 22 days. Okay, November the 6th. This is the 16th. We're halfway through, more than halfway through April. So 21, 22 days, something like that. But I heard it time after time. Oh, we're 22 days away from the elections. 22 days, 22. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. And oh, Jesus, really? Maybe it's because it's easier to calculate those 21 or 22 days than it is because you heard me struggle here, and of course, ciphering is not my long suit, but 11 years and 355 days. And I mean, come on. What can any of us actually do about climate change? It really. Oh, wait. We can insist on having candidates that take it seriously and we can vote for them. We can absolutely reject anyone who does not accept science and instead chooses to believe that that somehow or another, what was the quote, that the climate can change and the climate can change back. I don't know if man did it. Yeah, I want to see who drew the reports. Oh, well, I guess I'm just admitting that I can barely read it all. That's something. We can change some of the aspects of our lifestyle. Eventually, whether we're interested in climate change or not, climate change is going to be interested in us. Isn't that the way the saying goes? Subject line: swastika, Steve in New York. Here's what I find so fucked up. The guy could have said it was a swastika, which represents peace in Hinduism, but I have a suspect referencing any Hindu symbol would be even worse than acknowledging it's a Nazi symbol. Well, of course. Because John James, even if he is an African-American man, is not going to carry the African-American vote in Michigan. Because, well, I would say, you know, the Republicans constantly, why is it the goddamn Democrats always get the African-American votes? I don't know. Maybe it's because African-American people who aren't filthy rich, voting for Republicans is like, who was the preacher in Oklahoma? He was the father of an African-American Republican congressman from out there. J.C. Watts, was it? And his daddy, when asked if he voted for his own son, he answered it by saying, a black man voting for a Republican is like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. True. True. Subject line, climate change. Andy the Angry Jew writes in, I thought the biggest blown opportunity was in the Obama administration to totally create a new account of me with alternative energy sources. First year just keeping the economy alive, and then the right-wing obstructionists and oil interests, another 10 years behind the climate change arc. Our politics may be our doom. And that's a hell of a thing to have to contemplate. 11 years and 355 days. Maybe if we started emailing. Maybe, okay, we're a relatively small community. Who am I kidding? We're a tiny community. But what if, just what if, every member of the Horn Family Community Congregation sent an email every day to their member of the House of Representatives, their senators, their governor, their members of the local House and Senate, hell, their mayor. You know, just put together a template with all those addresses on it and just simply say, send an email every day that says, hey, it's 11 years and 355 days until... we have 11 years and 355 days to transition to a post-carbon economy and a post-carbon world. What are you doing about it today? And sign it and send it. Every fucking day. What if... I've referenced that panel out in Las Vegas at Netroots Nation many years ago, when Majora Carter and the heads of the various big greens said, well, you know, I mean, the environmental movement, climate change is never going to be anything that operates on a anything even resembling a par with the civil right, with the activism of the civil rights movement. And it pissed me off then because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if the people with the wherewithal to help build and support that movement say that that movement ain't going to happen. So that means it's on us. If you're a member of Congress, if your senator holds a town hall meeting, maybe consider showing up and show up with your count. Hey, it's 11 years and 212 days that we've got to figure out how to transition to a post-carbon economy. What are you doing about it? Because we are talking about the ability of this planet to support human life. And maybe it's time we get really, really smart with our knowledge. Maybe it's time that we be able to answer like a lightning strike when they say, well, you know, especially if it's some goddamn Republican, when they say, well, you know, we don't really know that it's man. Yes, we do, you dumbass. The IPCC report, which our government signed off on, says that human beings are responsible for every last bit of temperature increase since 1850. Got another stupid talking point? And all I'm trying to say here is that I know it's a tough issue. I know it's hard to figure out how to address it, how to talk about it. But again, we have 11 years and 356 days to figure it out. And as the saying goes, there's no time like the present. With our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, Lee in New York, from the episode Naked Time, Scott, he's turned the engine off, completely cold. It'll take 30 minutes to regenerate them. Uhura. Ship's outer skin is beginning to heat, Captain. Orbit plot shows we have about 8 minutes left. Kirk. Scotty. Scott. I can't change the laws of physics. I've got to have 30 minutes. Lee says, if we only have 8 minutes but need 30, then we can fix climate change, even if we're out of time. It can be done in fiction. Obviously, it can be done in fact, just like transporters and warp drive. And to go next generation, holodecks and food synthesizers. Why not? Let's just wait until the night before the paper's done, and then try to bullshit our way into an honorable C. The only thing is, this particular issue is not going to be graded on a curve. Actually, if it's going to be graded on a curve, it's going to look like a hockey stick. And at the end of the day, and I really do mean the end of the day, it's going to be graded pass-fail. And right now we are on the way to a great big fail. Because I, after all, am Bob Kincaid, a little ray of sunshine. Steve in New York. Oh, dear, dear Bob, no gimmick infringement there. There's nothing to figure out about climate change. We know what to do. The problem is that we need people with the wherewithal to lead and do what we need. We know we need. And do what we need. Know we need to do. Yeah, I get that, Steve. And every minute that we spend, it's like Jeff Biggers said when I was talking with him the other night on the Malloy program, adaptation is death. This is not one of those Darwinian moments where we can adapt to a hotter planet, to acidified seas, and expect to get anything out of it, except, you know, In other words, it's an evolutionary breakpoint. And if we spend a bunch of time talking about our responsible use of our energy resources, featuring coal, oil, and gas, and don't say anything about that goddamn commie solar and wind and geothermal, if we spend any more time on that, we are fucked. Or so it seems to me. And just by way of pointing some of this out, we have a... Remember last night I was talking about the guy who quietly got confirmed to head the environmental division of the DOJ, and none of us had heard a damn thing about it? And now the guy who defended BP in the BP Horizon disaster, the poisoning of the Gulf of Mexico, is in charge of the enforcement of the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and every other environmental law in the United States. Remember that? Well, there's more. Because, how long ago was it? It was a couple of weeks back. Trump nominated, of course, he took his little the paper signing crayon and scrawled his name to an appointment paper. He doesn't know this guy from Adam's house cat because, again, general reminder, Donald Trump doesn't know what Donald Trump doesn't know. But whether he knew him or not, people like the Federalist Society and various and sundry energy groups knew him, and that was good enough for Donnie. And we now have a new nominee to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, commonly referred to as FERC. Now, FERC is supposed to be an independent agency. It's not supposed to be overtly political. Ha! But as of a couple of weeks ago, Bernard McNamee has been nominated to sit on FERC. He was nominated to be on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission because he is a loyal soldier in the war on the ability of this planet to harbor and support human life. Right now, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is down a member. It's a 2-2 split between Republicans and Democrats. Once he's confirmed by the Senate, they'll have all five commissioners, and it'll be 3-2, Republicans over Democrats, and they will be able to engage in an absolute orgy of pro-coal regulation. And make no mistake, that's the goal. And Bernard McNamee is as hardcore a political white wing weirdo and fossil fool as you're likely to find. The Hill, and I'm sure you run across their stuff from time to time, they've got an essential white wing bent. And back in April of this year, April the 17th of this year, Earth Day, The Hill used its op-ed page to publish an Earth Day op-ed. And lo and behold, it was authored by Bernard McNamee. With the disclaimer, the views expressed by contributors are their own and not the view of The Hill. Yeah, okay. Here's the title. This Earth Day, let's accept the critical role that fossil fuel plays in energy needs. That's like publishing an op-ed in the Journal of Suicide Prevention titled, "Today, let's accept the critical role that razor blades play in suicide." He writes,
"Since its inception in 1970, Earth Day, April 22nd, has been a strange mix, a celebration of springtime and the great outdoors, combined with doom and gloom prophecies of destruction centering on overpopulation, pollution, and capitalism."
Huh. Well, you know, if you wanted to destroy the ability of the planet to support human life, and you used the tools of overpopulation, pollution, and capitalism, you'd probably be off to a pretty damn good start now, wouldn't you? Human life is never going to be threatened by underpopulation. having clean water and clean air and clean soil is never going to lead to the end of the human species. And, well, then capitalism, where you do anything you want, anywhere you want, to anyone you want, as long as you can claim that you're making a profit doing it, I'd say that it works. By Jove. But nonetheless, even though Bernard McNamee was kind of pissed off, he said, "But because Earth Day is an opportunity for reflection about our planet and the people who inhabit it, we should consider how man's use of not woman's." You know, you can't. They can't even change the most basic aspects and elements of their mindsets. Man's use of natural resources. How about humanity's use of natural resources? Because I'm pretty sure that there are some women out there buying gasoline. I know for a damn fact that there are women who are friends of coal, because I've done met them. Seen them toddling along in their Cadillac Escalades with their Fiend of Coal license plate and their Fiend of Coal bumper stickers. Hell yes. We should consider how man's use of natural resources has affected the environment and the human condition. In particular, we should honestly assess the data as to how fossil fuels impacted our planet, the environment, and quality of life. But like most things in life, the data does not always reflect the popular narrative. And how do we know that they work together to crank out this filth? Because I've heard this shit come out of the mouth of none other than Don Blankenship. "Well, if you don't want fossil fuels, that must mean you want to live 9 families to an apartment like they do in communist China." No, dickhead, that's not what that means at all. McNamee begins to pout. "We've been told that fossil fuels are wrecking the environment and our health." Well, you know why you've been told that, Bernie? Because they are. Tell you what. Why don't you go up north of Fort McWhat-the-fuck in Alberta and build yourself a house in the middle of the goddamn lunar landscape that is the tar sands hellscape? Build it as big as you want. Build you a Beverly Hillbillies fucking mansion. Fill your cement pond with goo from the tar sands. Swim in it, Bernie. Cook with it. Bathe in it. Drink it. Wash your clothes with it. And get back to me about whether or not fossil fuels have wrecked the environment and our health. Well, not ours, yours in that case. Wait, you won't be able to because you'll be fucking dead.
"The facts are that life expectancy, population, and economic growth all began to increase dramatically when fossil fuels were harnessed."
No. People got sicker when London and largely merry old England burnt more coal. Oh, maybe the people who could get away to the country and had hyphenated names, maybe they lived longer. But they'd been living longer anyway because they had a decent diet. And they didn't have to, you know,
"Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here."
They didn't have to do that. The facts are, anytime a Republican says the facts are, you can assume that you're being lied to. "That life expectancy, population, and economic growth all began to increase dramatically when fossil fuels were harnessed and have continued to do so for the 200 years since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution." Think about that. Humanity lived successfully on this little blue-green marble, this little time machine, swirling in its helical pattern around a star and through the galaxy and through the universe. And for around, 100,000 years or so, modern humans, we figured out a way to live without burning fossil fuels. Socrates injected discussions of the meaning of true justice into the human debate without ever having seen a single lump of coal burned. Omar Khayyam crafted some of the most beautiful poetry the world has ever known without getting anywhere on gasoline. The civilizations of Tikal and Sacsayhuaman and Angkor Wat rose and fell without any natural gas whatsoever. Shakespeare wrote every one of his plays without electric light. The people at Cahokia raised a massive city that had 100,000 people in it, maybe. And they never breathed a single particle of coal ash. And we have reason to believe, especially here in the Western Hemisphere, that life expectancy was pretty damn good. We're talking about people who didn't have the common cold, people who didn't have measles, mumps, chicken pox, smallpox. And they somehow managed to survive, and not just survive, as William Faulkner said it in his Nobel acceptance speech, prevail. Without the blessed hydrocarbons, the fossil fuels, at whose blood-soaked altar Bernard McNamee worships. Fossil fuels. Now remember, this is an Earth Day address. Fossil fuels have allowed people to be more productive. Anytime a Republican starts talking about productivity, grab your wallet, because that means people are working harder for less. Fossil fuels have allowed people to be more productive, to engage in less backbreaking manual labor, and to grow more food. Fossil fuel use for machines, transportation, electricity, and plastics allows us to build complex devices, travel longer distances, illuminate our homes, and build everyday products from toys to computers. But the thing with that list is, if you don't take it on its face, if you sit back and analyze it, there's not one of those things that actually makes for a greater human experience. People adapt. And generally speaking, it has worked. We're in a place now where, as Jeff Biggers points out, adaptation is not an answer anymore. That's how bad the situation has gotten. Oh, and by the way, all that bullshit about what fossil fuels allow humans to do, he ignores the basic science. Of course, that's his job. He ignores the basic science that says that, no, really, no kidding, people who lived in the pre-agrarian Stone Age had more leisure time than good old Bernard McNamee does.
Without oil, natural gas, and coal, none of this would be possible and available to so many people. In fact, many in developing countries can't save premature babies because they don't have access to the reliable electricity that fossil fuels provide Americans.
Hey, Bernie, you dumbass. Our infant mortality and maternal postpartum mortality rate is higher than Cuba's. So much for the fossil fueled miracle of modern American medical science, huh? Oh, that's an interesting observation, Brother Deacon Asa. Yes, life expectancy and population numbers started to improve as we harnessed fossil fuels. So, too, you can temporarily improve your brain-dead, repig-licking attention span using cocaine. It's what happens when you use it over a long period of time that matters. Oh, goodness me. That's cowbell-worthy.
In the United States, energy allows us to produce three times as much food as we did a century ago in one-third fewer man-hours, so that on one-third fewer acres, and at one-third the cost.
Something makes me think somebody's externalizing something there. Because he is. Depends on how you define food. I was up at the Rippy Mart the other day. And I try not to eat snack foods, but I'm kind of powerless sometimes. And so I saw a bag of, I kid you not, from Frito-Lay. This is an unpaid product placement, and by the time I'm done, I saw organic white cheddar Cheetos. I have a Cheetos problem. I just do. But these were white cheddar organic Cheetos, damn it. How could I not? I had to at least try them. I mean, if they're organic, they gotta be good for you, right? No? Okay. So I bought a bag, and because I knew I was being had, all right, I tasted them, and, ooh, they were yummy. I mean, they were as poofy as any cheesy poof you'd ever want to eat, only it was white cheddar cheesy poof, so my ordinarily pink, white little fingertips, it just kind of stayed pink and white instead of turning Cheeto orange. Resist! And then I read the ingredients list. Yes. The cheesy poof dust came from organic white cheddar cheese. And the corn that it was made with came from organically sourced corn. Oh, but there it was. Saved the bag. Knew we'd be talking about this. Organic corn. Organic expeller-pressed sunflower oil. Organic cheddar cheese. Milk, cheese cultures, salt, enzymes. And there it was. Organic maltodextrin. No, really. What's maltodextrin? Well, you know what maltodextrin is. It's the solid form of high fructose corn syrup. and I try not to eat anything with it in it. Certified organic by Organic Kilth. Frito-Lay Incorporated, Plano, Texas. Copyright 2016, Frito-Lay North America, Inc. Uh-huh. By God, it had they got organic garlic powder, organic cream. It's got lactic acid in it, but I don't think you can have organic lactic acid. Organic Romano cheese. But it was the organic maltodextrin that got me. If you know how they go about making high fructose corn syrup, I mean, it's as complicated a chemical process as cracking and fracking petroleum. Neither you nor I can go and get a bushel of corn and come home and make high fructose corn syrup, or then dehydrate it so that it turns into maltodextrin. But somehow or another, they get away with calling this USDA organic, no artificial preservatives, flavors, or colors. Well, there ain't nothing natural about maltodextrin or high fructose corn syrup. From fertilizer produced with natural gas to tractors powered by diesel engines and irrigation systems that pump water and refrigerators that prevent food from spoiling, natural gas, oil, and coal are the energy that feeds America. You see how this works? People read this and they go, well, shit, if we don't have that, we're going to fucking starve. How did your great-great-grannies and great-great-grandpas manage not to starve? I can't answer for a lot of people, but I can answer for myself. They worked their asses off, and they lived up into their 80s and 90s. And they were dirt farmers. They were subject to disease. It was February in the 1840s when, within 7 days of each other, my great-grandmother and great-grandfather Kincaid died of some disease outbreak down in what is Greenbrier County, West Virginia. It's 75 years later when died in the mines starts showing up in the annals of my own family history, along with killed on the railroad. What this clown is prattling about is basically a recitation of what modern technology is. But it has absolutely nothing to do with where we have to get to in 11 years and 356 or so days. And so this guy is from, he comes from, this McNamee jerk, comes from the Texas Public Policy Foundation Center for 10th Amendment Action. In case you don't know, the Texas Public Policy Foundation is a Koch brothers funded white wing think tank. The only thinking which they do is along libertarian lines and has a lot to do with kissing coal, oil, and gases, carboniferous asses. Poetry on the fly. And so Donald Trump has his great big plan to somehow or another rejuvenate an industry that is dying of its own weight, his so-called pro-coal agenda, and McNamee was put on there specifically to advance it. And so, well, he had been Deputy General Counsel for Energy Policy at the Department of Energy. They hired him away so that he could draw a few months' paydays with the TPPF, Center for 10th Amendment Action, and their pro-fossil fuel life-powered project. What's the life-powered project? Well, give them a listen.
It's fantastic. And without it, this clear glass of water would look more like...
Oh, we missed a little bit. It's only a minute long. Let's get it from the beginning.
Energy. It's fantastic. And without it, this clear glass of water would look more like... that. As Austinites, Paul and I wanted to...
Now, time out. That's a visual trick. He pours a glass of water into another glass and it turns sort of creek water brown, brownish green. He's a white dude with a big old steroidally blown out neck like a Texas Longhorn steer. And, well, okay, so that's him. I mean, that's who's in it. That's the guy, that's not McNamee, that's the guy who's in the ad. Life Powered. The title of this video is Life Powered. 100% renewable isn't doable.
Create the most eco-friendly work environment. So we came up with an idea. Okay, Google, let's go 100% renewable.
You're an idiot.
That's right. And in fact, Google did attempt a climate change coup and failed miserably. That's because the wind doesn't blow 100% of the time. And it's also really expensive. Well, we get it. What doesn't sound great renewable?
Toilet paper.
While the word renewable...
Aren't they clever, these little libertarian fuckwads? What doesn't sound great renewable? Toilet paper.
Makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. It shouldn't be mistaken for cheap and reliable. It isn't. So just remember, all renewable isn't doable.
Except for the fact that that's a lie. The wind doesn't have to blow all the time. That's what the research into battery and storage technology is all about. That's what Grid 2.0 is about. And you know the really wild thing? A lot of the times when the wind isn't blowing, the sun is shining. And when the sun isn't shining, the wind is blowing. If this was a somewhat different circumstance, we would recognize people like the Texas Public Policy Front or foundation or whatever. And Bernie McNamee and these libertarian freaks who we would recognize them as people with suicidal ideations, and we would try to help them. Because as in the case of anyone in considering self-harm, oftentimes they lose perspective and they fail to think about all the other people that they will be hurting when they hurt themselves, because we do not live in isolation one from another. We are parts of communities. There are no lone wolves. Nobody pulls themselves up by their fucking bootstraps. And so these are the people, that guy, whoever that actor is, Bernard McNamee, all the various Republicans who have denied climate science for so long that we find ourselves up against a wall in the name of all of humanity. It's hard not to view them as homicidal maniacs if we understand the basic meaning of the word homicide. Homicide means simply killing a human being. And maniacs means doing it without regard and with great gusto and aplomb. And somewhere along the way, within these 11 years and 355 or 56 days, we're going to have to figure out how to deal with the homicidal maniacs. Among other things, Bernie McNamee, in the Office of Policy at the Department of Energy, well, he tried to gut the wholesale energy markets. And he tried to do it to the benefit of the coal industry. FERC didn't let him do that so far. So naturally, what do? Well, you nominate the fucker to FERC. And let him FERC America and the world. Got one of the other goobs on FERC, the chief of staff, Anthony Pugliese. Dude has no energy policy experience whatsoever. And so naturally, in 2017, he was named chief of staff of FERC. And so that chief of staff has been out giving interviews to say the website that rhymes with light and fart. He travels on our dime and praises white-wing politicians of the extreme fascist variety. He's a big Nigel Farage fan. And, among other things, writing to someone at that website that rhymes with light and fart, they hooked him up on a trip to the UK. In an email, he said, "If you think there are a few people that would be worth meeting, let me know." So he hooks him up with Ben Harris Quinney, hyphens, you know, chairman of the Bow Group, the only conservative think tank in the entire UK. And then he wanted to have a fanboy meeting with Nigel Farage, who is a goddamn fascist himself. Yeah. So this is what we face. The guy is openly hostile to renewable energy. Yeah, I agree. Clarity says muffled frickers. Yep. Well put. So I mention all of this, A, because we're at 11 years and 355 days, but B, because so many of these little vermin scurry and creep under the door sills and in from behind the baseboards, and we can't keep up with them. And you want to, well... Bernard McNamee, I guess his mother loved him once. Bernard McNamee needs to be on my radar, your radar, our radar, because he is a homicidal maniac. His worldview has the potential to kill millions, if not billions. Because one of the things that we do know about climate change, once it gets going real good, it will probably operate on a level similar to or worse than the worst of the Black Death of the 14th century as it ravaged Asia and Europe. Only the ravaging now will be on a global scale and no continent will be exempt. So, food for thought. A few notes. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, I hate when I get this way. Eat the rich. Now, Matt, too much rich food is not good for you. But we know who the problems are. Back to my remark about us being graded on a curve. Lee says climate change is on a curve, the Keeling curve. You can look it up. You won't like it. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, a little while back said, Bob, I do kind of miss the ads for Horn Nutraceuticals. I know. It was fun. And they'll be back from time to time. Let's see. Our buddy Irish Dave says, today's fun fact, it's a blast from the past. The killer fogs of London took not a single life after the day that the burning of coal there ceased. Infant mortality is crucial to the lifespan calculations, and the Western U.S. pioneer graveyards are full up with markers that read, died in childbirth. If only them Conestoga wagons had been coal-powered or such as and shit. In other words, says Steve in New York, he's a booger eater. And a maggot. Jack in Shreveport, living with the environment. When you mentioned the seven generations ahead that Native Americans considered in their decisions, how many years was that for them? Like 7 times 20 for 140 years ahead, maybe? Also, I was thinking about how many generations of elders would live over the same time period. If some people lived about 60 years and counting some overlap, that would take about 3 people's lifetimes to cover those 140 years. I was thinking about this in the context of, I think, a book called The Fourth Turning. I think the deal was that after 4 generations, we seem to forget the lessons we learned and things go backward again. Your thoughts? Well, I've been saying it for a very long time. The great curse of humanity is our short lifespan. Maybe I'm wrong. But maybe if we did have people who lived to those Methuselah-esque ages, we might be able to see enough time pass to learn from our mistakes. Imagine if humanity had a 400-year lifespan, we would have people who had seen both the pre-industrial and the industrial and the post-industrial revolutions in one lifetime. Because one of the places where we get in trouble is our reliance on history, because we're not very good at it. Honest to God, we are not. I ran across an article, and I've been saving it, from The Verge. A philosopher explains how our addiction to stories keeps us from understanding history. And the subject of the article is a Duke University philosophy professor by the name of Alex Rosenberg. He's got a new book out called How History Gets Things Wrong, The Neuroscience of Our Addiction to Stories. And his theory is that because we rely on narratives that include things like a sort of omniscient presupposition of what motivated people or what people were thinking, that we may completely miss the point altogether. This is another one of those books on the list that I need to get hold of. It's published by MIT Press. And he says, Dr. Rosenberg says, I myself am a victim to narrative. He says, I've always been besotted by history, but it's not part of my academic credentials in any way. I'm a philosopher of science, and at one point I went back to graduate school to study molecular biology, anatomy and physiology, and evolutionary biology. These are fields that have the tools and the data and theories that have burgeoned over the last 30 years and which have begun to be able to finally shed light on the brain and human cognitive capacities and abilities. My interests have been carried along by developments of sciences that have been increasingly employed in areas like neuroscience to address some very traditional questions that philosophers have been interested in. He says, the real imperative of my book is to try to get people to see that neuroscience has, in the last 20 years, begun to teach us about the nature of the brain and its relation to the mind, and of course how this undermines theory of mind, the ability to guess other people's thoughts and motivations. He said, there have been startling developments that have won Nobel Prizes and begun to answer the most profound questions people have been asking about human thought as far back as Aristotle and Descartes. How the brain could be the mind, exactly what it is about the machinery of neural circuitry that constitutes thought and cognition. If you pay attention to research and developments in these areas, you discover the way the brain actually realizes the cognitive properties that govern human experience is nothing like what consciousness tells us it is. But lest we think that he is preaching from some ivory tower, he says, I myself am a victim of the narrative. I love narrative. It's the only thing I read, and it's fantastically seductive. When I say narrative, I don't mean a chronology of events. I mean stories with plots, connected by motivations, by people's beliefs and desires, their plans, intentions, values. There's a story. The problem is, these historical narratives seduce you into thinking you really understand what's going on and why things happened, but most of it is guessing people's motives and their inner thoughts. And so I think that goes to the heart of what Jack was asking about. Part of the reason that we lose out after two or three generations is because we no longer have even anything resembling a primary understanding of why people did what they did. Now, in the case of capitalism, it's kind of easy. Rich people did capitalist things because rich people wanted to be more rich. And the devil take the hindmost. But it's not as easy when you move away from broad brushstroke stuff like that. But if we're going to succeed, if we are going to save the ability of humanity to live on this planet, the mistakes of the past 200 years have to be corrected. We have to kind of have a truth and reconciliation with our fossil fuel obsession. And then we have to go forward as best we can. You know, all those people that that McNamee was talking about there who don't have reliable electricity, somehow or another, although we would probably not swap our lives for theirs, their populations have not collapsed. So are there answers? can you take a bumper sticker slogan like live simply so that others may simply live and turn it into public policy? If you take the optimistic view of, say, a Jeff Biggers and suggest that we can get started and we can make cities of resistance, well, I don't see any other way forward. I guess the McNamees of the world figure that, well, everybody else can die off, but I'm gonna live in a bubble city. Me and mine. Or maybe in a subterranean bunker on the Bolivian-Paraguayan frontier with George W. Bush, or his git. But yeah, that little ad I played you from the Texas public policy, whatever. Yeah, Google tried and failed. Well, as Brother Deacon Asa points out, 100% renewable isn't doable. Ask the largest corporation that ever existed in the history of the planet, Bernie. Dumbass. Apple now globally powered by 100% renewable energy. A lot of work to be done. But damn it. They at least do us the kindness of giving themselves away when they say that it just can't be accomplished. Because we know it can. Because, as William Faulkner said, man will not just survive, man will prevail. So let's take a little break here at the halfway mark of the program and see if anybody's got anything on their minds, if there's anything you want to talk about. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178, 304-640-2829. Toll free from anywhere, Canada, the United States, Mexico, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've got something on your mind, there's no reason you should not be able to reach the program. All you have to do is try. In the meantime, we still have $215 to raise, and the fact of the matter is we've got to keep up with fundraising all the way to the end of the week so that come Monday we can still have a program. And we're talking about 21 people doing 10 bucks a piece. John got us started this evening and got us down from 225. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very much. So run on over to headon.live, click on the PayPal link, and help us keep this conversation going. In the meantime, yeah, we'll take a break and see if anybody's got anything on their minds. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hold on. What is that?
What's at work here is greed. And we are the sacrificial lambs of that greed. We are the people that's in the way of money. And we're up against a huge industry that is brutal, and our lives are in danger. And if we don't stop this, we'll be snuffed out or we'll have to be forced to move. And I guess I'll be snuffed out because I won't move.
Drug my water from the well. Grown my food upon this land. But the changes I see coming, they're tearing at my heart. Cause there ain't nothing better than the original land. These mountains, a state of the art. State of the art. State of the art. These changes trees I see coming, they're tearing at my heart, cause these mountains are state of the art. They come with their drag lines, rip out the coal. They ruin our water, tear our homelands apart. They say they'll put it back better than before. But these mountains are state of the art. State of the art. State of the art. These changes I see coming, they're tearing at my heart, cause these mountains are state of the art. Come by the truckload to bury their waste. Tell me when will it stop, once the poison starts. They say they'll protect us with technology's grace, but these mountains are state of the art. State of the art, state of the art. These changes I see coming, they're tearing at my heart, cause these mountains are state of the art. When the trees are all gone and the mountains are flat, I guess they'll build some new condos and a bigger Walmart. They say this is progress, I don't know about that, cause these mountains are state of the art. State of the art. State of the art. These changes I see coming, they're tearing at my heart, cause these mountains are state of the art. State of the art. State of the art. These changes I see coming, they're tearing my heart, cause these mountains are state of the art.
It's Tuesday, October 16, 2018.
5 days after the storm slammed into the Florida Panhandle, patience is running thin.
Large swaths of the Florida Panhandle still awaiting aid after catastrophic Hurricane Michael. Michael was the fourth record-breaking hurricane to make U.S. landfall in the past 15 months. Plus,
I'm not denying climate change.
Despite Michael's record-breaking destruction, Republicans are still denying the science and the economic impact of climate change.
All of that destruction and denial straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A UN report warning about catastrophic damage from climate change drops just as such a hurricane hits. Only a moron could not see the connection. Or as Trump said, I don't see the connection.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, if I'm not mistaken, your teaser there at the top about Michael as the fourth hurricane to hit the U.S. over the past 15 months, that doesn't include Hurricane Lane out in Hawaii, though, does it?
No, but Hurricane Lane only skirted Hawaii. It didn't actually make landfall.
So it left a record amount of rainfall in Hawaii, but it doesn't count because it wasn't a hurricane when it hit the island.
Basically, yes.
I see.
Well, on Monday, President Donald Trump toured some of the destruction left behind by Hurricane Michael across several southern states. The Category 4 storm obliterated entire neighborhoods. As of airtime, at least 18 people are confirmed dead across four states, but that number is likely to rise as rescue crews search for at least 30 people still listed as unaccounted for. Nearly 1 week after the storm, emergency services have still not reached some storm victims, with food and water being airdropped into rural areas that were cut off. More than 200,000 people are still without power amid stifling heat and humidity, with some officials warning that electricity in some areas might not be restored for a month or more.
What is this, Puerto Rico?
Officials in Mexico Beach warned that recovery could take a year.
Yes, it's Puerto Rico.
For the record, Hurricane Michael was the most powerful hurricane ever to hit the Florida Panhandle. It was the strongest storm to make landfall in the continental U.S. since Hurricane Andrew in 1992. Hurricane Michael now ranks among the top four most powerful hurricanes on record to make landfall in the United States. Michael was the strongest hurricane to hit Georgia since record-keeping began in the 1850s. Michael was so strong that the rumbling of its winds and waves showed up on undersea seismometers that measure earthquakes.
Wow.
Michael was the fourth Category 4 hurricane to hit the United States in just the last 15 months, following last year's Harvey, Irma, and Maria.
And then, of course, there was this year's Lane and Florence, but apparently they don't rate.
Not as major hurricanes at landfall.
So major is considered to be Category 3 or above?
Correct.
Got it.
Scientists say that Hurricane Michael's sudden intensification from Category 1 to almost Category 5 in less than 24 hours fits a recent pattern. All of the worst hurricanes of the past 2 years, Harvey, Irma, Maria, Florence, and Michael, intensified extremely rapidly. Initial estimates of economic losses put damages from Hurricane Michael at about $30 billion. In Georgia, where farmers were just about to harvest their crops, agricultural damage is forecast to top more than $1.5 billion alone. In 2018, so far, the United States has had 12 extreme weather disasters costing more than $1 billion in damages. All of Hurricane Michael's extreme records are in line with climate scientists' predictions of what we'd expect to see with global warming. But Republicans like President Donald Trump and Florida's own Republican Senator Marco Rubio took to the airwaves to downplay the fact that climate change is man-made and is having major economic impact right now. In a CNN interview on Sunday, Senator Rubio acknowledged that rising sea levels are impacting infrastructure and climate change might be a factor, but he promoted the false claim that transitioning away from fossil fuels to clean energy would somehow be more expensive than the mounting economic losses from multiple billion-dollar extreme weather disasters that we are seeing every single year.
And that means mitigation, hardening. We've been working on that very hard and continue to strategies to mitigate against those factors that are going to be in place no matter what happens with our energy policy. But I'm also not going to destroy our economy.
For the record, numerous economic studies and the real life experience of booming economies like California have proven that the cost of transitioning to clean energy is far, far cheaper than the damage caused by fossil fuel emissions with global warming, including the lives saved from cutting air and water pollution from fossil fuels. Climate change is already having an enormous economic impact right now.
Yeah, but that's nothing compared to the economic impact on Marco Rubio's campaign if the Koch brothers pull out their money, if he stops denying climate change.
Good point.
For much more on all of these stories, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Follow where the money goes. Follow where the money goes. Follow where the money goes.
And yes, indeedy, it is about 16 minutes before the hour, before the third hour of the program. Thank you very kindly to Charlene. Charlene just took us down below the $200 mark. We now have $195 to go in fundraising for the evening. And that, John and Charlene have helped out this evening. They'd love to have some company. And if we can just keep even, then we can make it through October and get a fresh start on a brand new month. Because that's how it is when you do progressive broadcasting. 3 hours a night live, five nights a week, 12 months a year. And, you know, there's no, well, there's no ads for Buy Gold Now or Nutra Neuro Programming, whatever. You know, I take off down these tracks, and I'm genuinely disturbed, worried about the contents of the IPCC report, and maybe I should go over and start. Maybe we should analyze a story about something stupid that Geezer Disgustus has said. Or we started the program with a Senate candidate in Michigan and Nazi iconography. Should we do more of that? I'm having a genuinely hard time. I mean, we have our fun with this madness as a way to sort of keep the madness at bay. But there's a lot of stuff out there that speaks to existential issues that touch upon us all, even if we don't know we're being touched. And I'm inclined to go in that direction. By the way, I had a note from Charlene. That 20 was toward a challenge. If somebody else will meet her 20, then Charlene will kick in another 15. So that would take us down to 160 to go. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very, very much. Hopefully, someone will scrape up a 20 and answer your challenge so that we can keep the ball rolling this evening. Now, having said what I just said, I'm inclined to go toward this one particular story. It was my attention was drawn to it on Twitter, and it has to do with, lo and behold, those ultrafines. And this is an older story. This goes all the way back to January 2017. I think we even talked about it back then. But it has an ongoing relevance. From Science Magazine, an article by Emily Underwood called "The Polluted Brain: Evidence Builds That Dirty Air Causes Alzheimer's and Dementia," which makes you think that maybe Donald Trump has spent the better part of his life sucking on tailpipes. I don't know. But it's a compelling story. Again, Science Magazine, January 26, 2017. Emily Underwood, the author. And it in that narrative form that we were talking about a few minutes ago, Emily Underwood describes the efforts to filter and measure ultrafine particulates. And according to a chemical engineer named Arian Safari, the higher the levels of, the smaller the particles are, that cells are exposed to, the greater stress they put on cellular structure. And that in turn leads to cellular damage and cellular change. But yeah, there's strongly correlative evidence to suggest that Alzheimer's and dementia may have a direct relationship to, or elevated levels of it may have a direct relationship to, ultrafine particulate matter. And of course, what we know, based upon the science that we have seen here in Appalachia, is that the ultrafines are tremendous contributors to the illness and death that plagues our hills and hollers here. So maybe go and look this up at Science Magazine. January 2017, Emily Underwood. And she brings up fascinating stuff. Demented dogs in Mexico City in the early 2000s offered the first hints that inhaling polluted air can cause neurodegeneration. Neuroscientist Lillian Calderon Garcedueñas, who is presently at the University of Montana in Missoula, saw that aging dogs living in particularly polluted areas of Mexico City became addled and disoriented, lost the ability to recognize their owners. And then she did some, examinations of their brains when they died. And they had a lot of extracellular deposits of a protein called amyloid B. And that's the same plaque that you get in Alzheimer's disease. And then lo and behold, when she started comparing that to people who had died in children, young adults from Mexico City who had died in accidents, she found the same thing. There we go, David in South Carolina pointing out Mad Hatters. Yep. Of course, that was mercury exposure. Oh, and by the way, Charlene's challenge has been met. Thank you very, very kindly. I don't know if I can... you always have to tell me if I can announce, I mean, unless I know previously. If I can announce who did that, then I will. If I shouldn't, I won't. Some people prefer their anonymity. But yes, Charlene's challenge was met. So that will take us down to, 160. So 16 more folks at $10 a piece, and we're done for the evening. And hey, we've got an hour and 8 minutes to get that done in. So all that blather from, what's his name, McNamee, that jackass, that fossil fool, well, no. Fossil fuels also contribute to misery. And what's their answer to that? Well, it ain't really science and we don't believe it. And that's all they got. To treat science like a religion in which if you believe the magic cracker turns into Jesus meat in your tummy tum, then the magic cracker does turn into Jesus meat in your tummy tum. But science doesn't work that way. No. Meanwhile, let's look at where we all live. Energy efficiency is one of those benchmarks of how well we're doing or not doing. And the folks at Wallet Hub took a look at the efficiency of auto and home energy consumption in the 48 continental United States. They accepted Hawaii and Alaska because, well, energy costs out there are inflated by virtue of remoteness. So the number one most energy efficient state in the union is New York. In terms of home energy efficiency, it ranks number 3. And auto energy efficiency, it ranks number 2. But based on the scoring from this survey, they come out at number 1. Vermont's number 2. And in light of the fact of what they want to do to Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears National Monument, that is, destroy it for hydrocarbons, how shocking that Utah is number 3. Home energy efficiency rank of 2, auto energy efficiency rank of 10. This is interesting. Rhode Island is number 1 in auto energy efficiency, but number 6 in home energy efficiency. Maybe it's because Rhode Island's a small state and people don't drive a lot? No, that probably doesn't make sense. But the top 10 are New York, Vermont, Utah, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Colorado, Minnesota, Wisconsin, California, and Connecticut. Kind of surprised that California is all the way down at number 9. But then again, not really. Let's see. Auto energy efficiency ranking of 5, home energy efficiency ranking of 18. I don't know how they account for the size of population and so forth, but yeah. The middle tiers are places like Pennsylvania, Oregon, Maryland, Montana, Indiana at 30, Virginia at 33. Lo and behold, West Virginia is 38, and that is artificially high. It's just got to be 43rd in home energy efficiency and 23rd in auto energy efficiency. But the bottom 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yep. West Virginia just missed out on being the bottom 10 because we somehow managed to beat out Wyoming and Oklahoma and Kentucky and Texas. 35th in home energy efficiency, 42nd in auto energy efficiency. But I know, everybody wants to know who's dead last. Bet it's Mississippi. Bet it's not. Nope. Sorry, Todd. Sorry, Clarence. Sorry, David. South Carolina. With a grand total score of 17.68 on a 100-point scale, 48th in home energy efficiency, and 44th in auto energy efficiency, South Carolina is dead last in the United States in energy efficiency. Wow. You know, you'd think that warmer states would be, but I guess not. So maybe we should, maybe I should dig into that just a little bit more and see, and see if there's anything further to be gleaned from those numbers. David in South Carolina stands, SEC. The SEC does it again. West Virginia beats them in the highest obesity rates, though. Well, that's because, that's probably my fault. It's all the barbecue and I do and the grits and the gravy. And that's true. James in Illinois, subject line California. A whole lot of people living paycheck to paycheck and can't afford the buy-in of a pack of LED bulbs, much less a Prius. And in the future, the not very distant future, those 11 years and 356 days or so, we're going to have to address that. Here's a question for a country that put human beings on the moon. Don't you dare email me and say that's a hoax. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. But here, yeah, for a country that was able to do that. In, say, 10 years' time, just so that we've got a year and 356 days for like a victory lap. Could the country that put human beings on the moon put solar panels on every roof space in the United States? Could we? Could we, as a matter of public policy, come up with a program to subsidize that, seeing as how over the last God knows how many generations, the amount of millions and billions and trillions of dollars that we've thrown down the oil company, coal company, gas company rat hole, do you reckon we could give some welfare instead of giving it to the oil industry and the coal industry and the gas industry? Could we scrounge up a little welfare for people like James Notes who are living paycheck to paycheck? What happens to the economy if we do that? Now, if you ask the libertarian freaks from the Texas Public Policy Foundation or the any of the other goobers from the other white-wing think tanks, well, the economy will collapse. If you were listening to the Green News Report, you heard that clip from Geezer Disgustus. But if you've got a whole bunch of people working to install solar panels all over the country, and then you've got people who, instead of spending money on their power bills, are spending it on, oh, I don't know, a Prius, then the price of the Priuses theoretically comes down. And people, families have more disposable income, and that means you wind up with a better, more realistically functional economy than this dummied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, ginned-up, rubed-up economy that we have that's based on blue smoke and mirrors and people standing around the trading pit or by their computer now on Wall Street going, red, no, black, no, red, oh, shit. Maybe, just maybe. And David in South Carolina points out, subject line, public transportation. I'll bet lack of viable public transportation plays into these rankings for southern states. Oh, I'll bet it does, too. I'll bet it plays big time. Good observation, David. Thank you. Okay, let's run over and check in on the toll-free line. Hey, welcome to the program.
I don't know, Bob. I just don't know.
Say what?
I just don't know these things, Bob.
I know.
It's too much for me.
How are you tonight?
I'm good, Jim. What's happening?
There's a guy three roads down that has a bed alarm, and he just can't stay in it. I don't know why. He had surgery or something.
So what? Does it sound like general quarters on a battleship or something?
Yeah, it does. And I have never seen some of these derrieres move so quickly. I'm not laughing at it, but I mean, I didn't know what it was when I first heard it. And it's a bed alarm. I said, a bed alarm. He just won't stay in his bed. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah, he wants to go walk. He wants to go walk about.
Exactly. Just like the royal couple. That's what he wants to do. How's everything with you?
It's okay, Jim. I mean, it was very gray and dreary today, and that I've noticed the older I get, the more that I'm affected by that sort of stuff. A gray, rainy, shitty, cold day will just ruin my attitude all day long.
Well, it's a good day to snuggle up in bed or snuggle up by a fireplace with a good book or...
Well, I haven't figured out a way to do... I haven't figured out a way to do that and do 3 hours of live radio at the same time.
Well, as much as you read And supposedly, as much as you talk, I can see how you could enjoy those activities. You know what I'm saying? Because what you talk about, I know comes from something that you are exposed to. So there, lots of stuff to read. You don't have to have a book. You can have your laptop with you or whatever. But, you know, not every day can be sunny.
No, it can't. And, you know, come the end of the day, I mean, that's what we do. We Agnes and I sit there and we watch a movie together, or we read our various electronic reading thingies. And
by the way, what's the name of that movie we're talking about? The Devil?
The Devil You Know.
DevilYouKnow.com.
Yeah, you can find it on Twitter at DevilYouKnowFilm. And then it's the DevilYouKnow.com.
Okay.
And you can also get it on iTunes.
Okay, good. Oh, I want to warn you about something. If you're running Windows 10 and you get the latest update from Microsoft, it happened to me. It cost me $100, but it knocked out all my sound.
Oh, beautiful. I can't wait for that to happen.
It does, and it took those guys at Compute One and their wizards all of Monday to restore it.
Oh, so there will be much swearing going on.
Well, just don't, just wait until they give you an announcement that they clean that critter up. Because,
well, the thing is, with Windows 10, you really can't reject or hold off an update, and it's massively frustrating.
Well, I don't know what to say, but I think that you can hold it off, can't you? You don't have to just implement.
No, not that I'm aware of. No, you with Windows 10, they decided that they were going to force it on us. So you take updates whether you like it or not.
Well, it cost me $96 and some change. And I believe you, mean that was no fun. But a friend came by and picked it up and then brought it back right at 5 o'clock yesterday. So I'll tell you, it's just amazing. The things that can happen to you no matter where you are. I think I'm going to have my buddy bring my Alexa over here and just put it in and just drive people crazy.
Oh, no, don't do that. That's just cold.
No, it doesn't talk. I mean, it's pretty interesting. You probably have people, what they do, you have people coming in here talking to it. It would be, I don't know. It'd be something different, I can tell you that. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, our dear friend, Mr. Trump. You know, when I heard that retort of his, or whatever you want to call it, I was just thinking they ought to have him, his wife, and that woman with the horse face, you know where they really belong? Honestly, true. They fit just right in. Oh, Jerry Springer.
When you consider Donald Trump's origins in public media, the other obvious choice is professional wrestling. Because long before The Apprentice, he was a character in professional wrestling. And the kind of stuff that he said today on Twitter is straight out of professional wrestling.
Sort of like Ric Flair.
Well, Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, you know, pick one.
Ric Flair almost beat my ass one time. this friend had lured me into a wrestling match in Columbia, and I was just all messed up, and I kept yelling, nature girl, and he said, I'm going to whip your goddamn ass if you say it one more time. And I said it one more time, and he came out of the ring. And guess what? I jumped a row of seats, and I was out of there.
Only you, Jim. Only you.
Well, you know, I've got to live up to my title as being what? You said it.
Incorrigible?
Incorrigible. I don't know. I'm not nearly as incorrigible as some people, let me tell you. But really, I think Jimmy's... that show with Jerry Springer, well, it's a great place for the Donald to be up there. And the comments, I mean, it's just pure white trash. I mean, it's just, that's all it is. It's like a real bad, a real bad soap opera or something.
Well, yeah, afternoon TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I caught something on, on the computer this afternoon, and it was a broadcast of the afternoon when President Kennedy was shot, and the actual soap opera that was running, and the different types of stuff they were advertising and all this stuff. And the soap opera, I think my mother used to watch that soap opera. As the world turned, and then boom, they came in, you know, flash. But they were advertising fabric softener and starch and...
There's a reason that they were known back then as soap operas.
Yeah,
because exactly. they were aimed at women who were in the home during the day, and they were largely sponsored by soap companies.
Well, she had a friend now, and who had another friend, and if they had to miss one or something like that, I mean, it was absolutely necessary that the one not being able to see it would write it down and write out the plot of who by name, what they did, and all this stuff. And they kept ledgers on this shit.
Well, I always remember from years and years past a definition of a soap opera is a television production where it takes a woman 12 months to have a premature baby.
There you go.
But in the cultural milieu in which I grew up, Jim, they weren't called soap operas. They were simply called stories.
As in,
I got to get home, my stories are on.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And I don't like to miss my stories.
The only one that I even had any type of interest in, and it faded quickly, was Dark Shadows.
Well, that was a different animal. I mean, that was the soap opera format, but it was, you know, paranormal and ghosts and ghoulies and goblins,
yeah.
And yeah. I mean, I still remember the cultural phenomenon that was General Hospital during the Luke and Laura days.
Was Joe Collins on that thing?
I can't remember which one, but I'm sure she was.
I saw her the other night on a live thing. And I said, my God, that woman cannot be human. But she looked absolutely fantastic. I mean, she hadn't changed a bit since Dynasty. She looked just like...
Somebody's got a painting in a closet somewhere?
I don't guess. She have to. I was just absolutely stunned. Joan Crawford, Joan Collins, good Lord. But Yeah, Dark Shadows was.
Joan Crawford, Joan Collins, you know, potato, potato.
Well, at least Joan Crawford got her name out of the contest. Her real name was Lucille LeSueur. And Big Louie couldn't handle that one, so they had a big contest.
Yeah, beats the daylights out of Homer Noodleman.
Yeah, and I tell you, one thing she did my time, and that was autographs. And I'm afraid that Greta Garbo, she had trouble keeping checks and had to have somebody do her shopping and stuff for her. Because anybody who at first got a check with her name on it, they wouldn't let it go. Because the check was itself, with her name on it, Greta Garbo, was worth more than any amount.
Than the face value of the check itself, right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And she had to have somebody keep all her books and stuff like that. And she would, I mean, even for wounded soldiers and stuff like that, even the most pitiful cases of fans and, you know, whatever. No, she just never would. She was just like that. And she lived in this ugly old brick building on 57th Street. And I told you, a friend of mine dressed up like a floral delivery boy and tried to get in there. And she had this big woman at the door and said thank you and grabbed the flowers and about grabbed him because he wanted to get in the apartment where she lived. I understand that apartment was one of the most beautiful in the city and that Greta probably had the first nickel she ever made. She was tight-fisted.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It could be seen at flea markets and stuff like that. Now, you had to go to the right flea market, and you had to not give any recognition. She had long, straight hair that was combed down, and you had bangs and dark glasses and a trench coat and trousers. And even you could not even, if you made any move toward her, she could disappear as if she were being, you know, beamed up to Scotty. You see all kinds of people walking the streets of that city, Bob. You just have nowhere to be.
Wow.
In Central Park, you can see Jackie Kennedy. I've seen her many a time at Central Park with her kids. With just a T-shirt and blue jeans.
Yeah, you just have to not be an asshole. You just have to not be an asshole about it.
No, right, exactly. I mean, you know, people it knew because I mean, you know, number one, that was the reason she was in New York for anonymity, and number two, you just had nothing but great sympathy for her. And there's a place called the International Grocery Store downtown near Soho. And Anthony Perkins was there. I see him there all the time.
Well, folks got to go out. I mean, you can't just live behind your gate and, you know, no.
Mm-mm, no. And, you know, I was in love with him when I was a kid. I just thought he was the most handsome thing in the world. But when I saw him in the flesh, he looked just exactly like that. Had a pair of jeans, sweater. Has aviator glasses and tennis shoes. You should push your buggy like everybody else. And so, you know, it's funny when you run into people like that, you know, and you realize I used to admire this individual on the huge screen and stuff like that. And he was a good actor, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think what really ruined him, I think what hurt him in the film was when he played Psycho. I know Tab Hunter had warned him not to do that movie. He said, if you do it, you're going to be typecast like that. And, you know, he probably was. I mean, I remember on the beach, and he was in some space movie with Max and me and Shell, and he was in a couple movies, Raintree County. I think he was in that one, but I don't know. But whenever you think of Anthony Perkins, you always think of Norman Bates.
Oh, absolutely. I heard the music, yeah.
Well, anyway, well, you know, now, the, you know, but I've been watching a lot of TV lately, YouTube.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, I've got my laptop here, and so, yeah, I can, but that's a great thing there to have, and, I just look at all these people, but most of the people that I recognize and really know, they're dead.
Sobering thought.
It is, but I mean, you know, you look at all these, they had this, they analyzed Animal House today.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and it was an interesting, it was how the movie was made, and up in that little city in Oregon, and the guy who did it, I can't remember his name, gosh, I'm sorry. But he was just a dropout of high school graduate, and he had two other writers with him. But they started naming the characters. But I think, let's see, the guy who played Dean Werber, he's gone. And, of course, John Belushi's gone. And one other guy.
And, well, the guy who wrote it.
They're there, I believe.
No, the guy. Oh, God, I can't. He co-wrote Board of the Rings with Douglas Beard. He committed suicide many years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was John Belushi. That was the first one. But one of the funniest people in that, funniest characters in that movie, a scene that I always remember, was Dean Werber's right. Wife. Remember when they went to the grocery store and he pulled out that big...
Well, yeah, and you know what? There's a little language lesson tucked away in there, too. The difference between nauseous and nauseated.
Yeah, but there were also vegetables are sensual. People are sensual.
Yeah, okay, not... Yeah, sensual versus sensuous, not nauseous versus nauseous. Yeah.
Yeah. And she tells she was well for it in the beginning. He says, "I'm Mrs. Werber, and the dean is my husband." And he invites her to the toga party. She says, "I've got to go to the goddamn senior honors dinner tonight." But boy, she changed her mind, didn't she? And she wasn't a bad looking woman. And I think that she may have passed on. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, you've got some folks thinking. I just got a note from Steve in Georgistan. You've occasioned some time travel, Jim. Subject line: Young and Restless. My first crush was on Jill Foster Abbott Reynolds Chancellor Thurston Brooks Atkinson. Her real name, if you hyphenated all her married names, LOL. When I was knee high to a grasshopper. So, yeah, that.
Lord.
And that sent me down. You mentioned Dark Shadows. Kate Jackson. Remember Kate Jackson's original?
Yeah.
She showed up toward the end of Dark Shadows and was, beautiful. Just beautiful. Meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport says, "Hey, Harold Ramis went to my college." So, see the things you get started, Jim? You're an instigator. Hold on. Wait a minute. I think, just a minute. Don't go anywhere. For some reason or another, the Bluetooth dropped out. You'll be back in a minute. Stand by. There we are. Are you back? No, not yet. There you are.
I will say.
There you are.
Well, okay. Very good. I will promote one object or one product, which I think is real good. And if you're looking for something that's it's a good energy drink, you know, if you need high protein and stuff like that, there's a product out called Boost.
Oh, yes.
And the chocolate is very good. And they've redone the other parts, the vanilla and strawberry, and they don't have that medicinal taste either.
Yeah.
But that's good stuff, in particular if you just take all it and pour it over a glass filled with ice.
Now, see, I was about to expect you to say, you know, if you mix it with a little bourbon and branch water, but yeah.
No, that would work. No,
but that would be the but Jim, that would be the incorrigible answer.
No, I would never do that because number one, I never liked bourbon, and number two.
All right, Shivas.
I could no. The Boost is just good with plain water and ice. And it's good, and it's good for you. It's just something, you know, if you see it at the store, you ought to try and pick up a six-pack of it or something and put it in there. It's real good cold. Put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah, but it'd drive my blood sugar through the roof.
No, they've got the kind that won't. It's called... glucosamine or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's designed for people who have problems with their blood sugar. So you're not omitted from that particular product.
I'm trying real hard here, Jim.
Are you? I can see it right now.
What you're saying is you're opting for the Boost instead of the hospital food, is that it?
Yeah, exactly. And thank God a few friends dropped by with a care package. And so, you know, that helps too.
Do you have to sneak it past the nurses or?
No, I mean they don't care. Hell.
Well, yeah, not to get all personal or anything, but how much longer are you going to be in their tender mercies?
Well, I've got to, I think I have my gallbladder out. And so they're playing around with that. So it'll be a little while longer.
All right, well, you know, just stay in touch and let it, in it. You know, if you need to, maybe I should bring over a plate of barbecue. No, they probably wouldn't let you have that.
I don't think they would, Bob. I'll tell you, we've got this place has some really interesting people, though, and particularly the ones from Malaysia and Indonesia and the Philippines. And I didn't mention him the other night. There is one young man who is a botanist. I think that's the way you say it. And he came to my room at midnight, and I was asleep. And this guy looked so young that I thought it was a child. And I woke up and I said, "Son, what are you doing in here?" He said, "I've come for your blood." And I said, "What?" And he said, "I'm a laboratory technician." And he stood up, but he was like, he's like 25, but he looks like he's 15. And the most angelic face you'll ever imagine.
Jim.
Really, he did.
But the thing is, they all look so much younger the older we get.
Bob, if you saw this individual, you would say, you would card him.
The last time I was on campus at WVU, I was convinced they were admitting 9-year-olds.
Well, if you saw this kid, you wouldn't believe it. But I mean, just as well mannered, and all his ancestors are French. they went to, apparently they had gone to the Philippines, and then they returned, and his last name is like Dubonnet.
Oh, that sounds, it sounds like it could easily be Vietnamese.
Could be. But yeah. Nonetheless, none of these people up here could pronounce his last name.
Oh, of course not.
I said, what is your name? He said, Louis. And I said, really? He said, and your last name? He said, Dubonnet. And he said, no, I, he said, you're the only person here who's pronounced my name. And I said, your name is hard. It's beautiful. And so, you know, that's just, not being able to.
Jim, stop, Jim, stop hitting on the staff, okay?
I'm not. But not be able to sum it up, the, you know, guts to pronounce somebody's name. I mean, there was a guy, he was a doctor, lived near me, and his name was Belazade. And all the people there would call him Dr. M. And I asked him what the M stood for. He said, you won't be able to pronounce it. I said, what? I said, he said, Belazade. I said, Belazade, there's no problem with that. He said, you're the first person around here that's ever said it.
And, you know, culturally, Jim, all kidding and clowning around aside, culturally, it is a mark. It's a mark of respect. To
exactly.
at least make a passing attempt,
exactly,
and not in not in sport or anything like that, but it's a subtle form of discrimination to just say, well, I don't know what his name is. I just call him Dr.
M. It doesn't make no difference to me. I call you anything. You know?
Right. And it's a sign of disrespect. It's a sign of a certain amount of xenophobia, and of course, always a sign of ignorance.
Exactly. And the last thing he told me was, he said, "Thank you for pronouncing my name." And I said, "Look, you have a beautiful name, and so are you." And he said, "Anytime you need to have anything done," and he didn't hurt me a bit. And that's the one thing that bothers me more than anything in the world is a damn needle.
Yeah, well.
Lord knows if I had enough of those things. And luckily, I found him. He said, anytime you want to have anything done, you just call the lab and I'll come.
Have they made sure you got your flu shot while you were in there?
Yeah, and pneumonia shot.
Good.
And I tell you, the one who gave me the pneumonia shot, my God, she must have been jousting. I mean, I thought, whoa.
Drove it in with the heel of her shoe, did she?
Oh, my God. Now, have you had that pneumonia shot yet?
Oh, I have. I'm not due for one for another year or so. I'm saving my knuckles.
Listen,
there just aren't a lot of occasions that involve sticking a needle in your flesh that don't, Jim. I mean, I realize it's a relative scale, but...
You're terrible. You are horrible.
It's the ones that feel like they're using a 10-penny nail.
Well, that's the one I'm talking about, that pneumonia shot. That's what, and it's a big needle, and it has to go real deep.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, sometimes when you have to have blood drawn by somebody, and they keep...
Anytime I go over to do cheap blood work Wednesday or whatever it is, and like I said, I haven't had it done for months, it seems like I always get amateur hour over at the hospital, and I...
That sucks.
And
that
the last time they were... I am not kidding. Phlebotomist, and I think it was learning curve day or something in the lab there at the hospital. She comes over and I said, I've got a world class vein on the inside of my left arm, okay, in the elbow, And so she's poking around on my right, and I said, don't do that. She said, well, I can find it. I said, I don't care. Let's go for the one you can see.
And they always want to go on the top of your hand, too.
Oh, that one drives me crazy. I hate that. I hate that. But so
yeah,
she,
I've got this
vein on the inside of my left elbow that you couldn't miss if you were half drunk. And so we put the tourniquet on. I pump my fist a couple of times. That vein just goes boop. Here I am, and she proceeds to waller around inside that vein. Funny, I can't get no blood out.
It rolls over. It rolled over. I could hear it now.
And I said, enough. Get somebody else. So she calls over, apparently, her lab partner buddy, who proceeds to pull the needle out, uses the same needle, jams it back in, wallers around a little bit herself, and says, I can't get no blood out neither. And I said,
I said,
stop. This is silly.
I've done that before, too. I really have. I said, you know, I'm sorry, but I've just started the loop of this today, and you really need to sharpen your sense of aim or whatever it is that causes you to be what you are, but you're not doing it again to me.
And I looked over, and there was a guy over there who looked like, you know, he had some authority or something. I said, hey, bub, you know how to draw blood? He goes, of course. I said, well, these two don't. And I'm a gentle person. I'm a gentle person. I'm a nice person. I don't go around trying to make people's days bad. But, you know, when we're down to talking about poking holes in my flesh.
And you get charged out and ask for it.
And so I said, can you get blood out of my arm? He says, sure. He comes over and whoop, and it flows through. And I'm like, did you two pay attention? Did you see what he just did?
Yep, there you go. Somebody knew what they were doing. And that's this young man, Louis. Just the same way, actually. I tell you, Bob, I've had so many of those things that it's better now. But my arms probably look like Lou Reed's before he went on methadone. I'm not kidding you. Mr. Cat Tracks himself.
Oh, man.
I tell you.
It's tiring.
I know we're probably boring the hell out of a lot of people.
I'm getting emails from people. I was talking about, you know, the kids at WVU looking like 9-year-olds. David in South Carolina wrote in and said, even Major League Baseball players look like little leaguers on these playoffs. It's a function of the aging process. It is. Lee in New York said, Jim and needles, I have allergies. I've gotten shots for decades, usually every 2 or 3 weeks. I guess you get inured to it, but oof.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't faint at the sight of blood or any of that kind of stuff, but and generally I'm okay. You know, stick the thing in, you know, and done. But every now and then you run across somebody who should, you know, I don't know, be working in plumbing or HVAC or coal mining or something like that, but not having anything to do with needles.
Or could be up there in Alaska with that, what is that problem? It's called a gold mining in Alaska with some kid up there, they park or stable. Have you seen any of those things? Of these guys who do nothing but mine for gold all day long?
No.
And it's almost like a soap opera. But there's this 16-year-old kid, he's not 16, he's 24. And he inherited all this from his grandfather and his father. And he does nothing but look for gold. But it's interesting to see how, you know, they gather the gold. Then he got the gold fever. They went to Guyana. I think he got cured of the gold fever down there because they were on location with a film crew, and it showed that jungle at night. And there was one incident where this big hole python or anaconda was just on the move. And the temperature in that place at night was like over 100. And I thought to myself, buddy, I bet you'll be glad to get to the Klondike after this adventure. And even after it was over, he said, yep, he certainly would. But there was supposedly a mountain of gold there, a legend. And all these prospectors were trying to find it. And there's also another legend about a monastery that where these, who were the ones founded by, the real militant ones, founded by, not Dominicans, not Franciscans. But
the Jesuits?
Yeah. Anyway, the Jesuit missionary, Spain told them they must come home, that they were abandoning that, and these guys had deviated from Jesuitical doctrine, and they stayed there, and the rumor is that inside that monastery, they had tunneled beneath it, and there were just tons of gold that were supposed to go back with them. And there are people still looking for it, you know, kind of like they're looking for that treasure up there at Oak Island.
Right, yeah.
But this is a little more credible than Oak Island. And whoever did this, they, like, rigged those tunnels. You know, like you see one with a Harrison Ford movie and Indiana Jones.
Sure.
I mean, they actually had tunnels just like that. And there was one incident where they found a skeleton, and the skeleton had a knife stuck in its ribs.
Nice.
So somebody had been there looking for something that they shouldn't have been looking for, I guess. But anyway, if you have a chance, it's on the Discovery Channel if you get it. They have some interesting programs up there. They really do. And I was just thinking, I don't think I'd like to live in Alaska. And they are now making this thing about living off the land. These people go up there and build these log cabins themselves, and they live up there, and they don't have any communication during the winter. Except that, you know, it really shows the hardy frontier person. I sure as hell couldn't do it, and I wouldn't do it. But they have a whole family of 9 people they're doing a whole story about. And I see some of that. But they can have all the Alaska as they want. I might want kids to see it from an ocean liner going through a pass, but that'd be about it. And
well, but remember, thanks to climate change here in a couple more months, Jim, it'll be warmer in Anchorage than it will be in Beckley.
Yeah, that's a bad thing. And the fact that they are ignoring that report of the international, of the United Nations, that gives, 13 years, and then we go to the point of no return?
Basically, that's the upshot.
Just that, Bob. That's not long at all.
No, it isn't.
I mean, if we are that far advanced, I don't even think it would really take a purposeful effort to slow that process down, because right now it's moving forward with such momentum. And that momentum is not being lessened, it's being increased. As you were discussing earlier in the program. And the people who are, you know, have the money, they're the ones who have the influence. And they bought the damn government. We don't have any government anymore. And all we have is just a bunch of thieves up there. And, you know, terrible people that I would want to even speak to on the street. And and all they're interested in is, you know, getting rich and shit like that. But I don't see how we could stop in 13 years, given things the way they're going. As you were talking about, I mean, people just think that things are so wonderful in the stock market that they went up 500 more points, 548 or something. Well, that's great if you got stocks. But the ones who got stocks are what percentage of the people? Not many.
No.
And, you know, and the people who see that on TV, and, you know, they say, well, things must be real good. Well, things, they might be good for somebody else, but they aren't necessarily good for them. And a lot of those margins generated on that stock market are done by industries that are poisoning the air, destroying the earth, and polluting the water. And they don't have a killing all wildlife. What is that big, oh gosh, excuse me, the reef off Australia?
Oh, the Great Barrier Reef? Yeah.
How much of that's been destroyed?
A lot.
Yeah. And you know, and what they don't realize is eventually they're going to stop the life cycle in the sea, you know? Because everything is from the bottom up. This feeds on that, them feeds on that, you know? And we're at the top of the food chain, and we're the ones destroying the whole process. That's for damn sure. It really looks sad. It really does.
And it's pretty, I mean, and that's, you know, the struggle is to find a way to talk about it, Jim, without just giving up.
I know it is. And yet people are so, I mean, I joked about Trump and his whoring and, you know, his just, bad taste and bad hair and bad everything being on your finger. But, you know, that's the thing people talk about. And it takes, I just wonder if he behaves so outrageously that, you know, he realizes he could take people's minds off the real horrible things that he's doing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you caught this or not. This just rolled into me a little bit ago. It challenges one's ability to make appropriate use of the language, Jim. The story coming out of course, Turkey with the slaughter of this of a resident journalist in the United States, Jamal Khashoggi.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it is. And you know, look, everybody knows that the Saudis are barbarians. Okay, and I don't use
that. Of course they are.
I don't use that term lightly. They're jumped up and they got a bunch of money, but their mindset is still in the in the ninth century.
Of course.
And that might even be unfair. They might have been more civilized in the ninth century.
Well, that's probably got a point there.
You know, the great flourishing of the Muslim cultures.
Exactly.
But, oh, my God. Trump gave an interview to the Associated Press, and in describing, in responding to the murder, the presumed murder of Jamal Khashoggi, he said, and I quote, "Here we go again with 'you're guilty until proven innocent.'"
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, Jim. In other words, he just equated the Saudis with Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that man has no moral compass. He never had any moral compass. And, you know, that poor man, when he walked into that emissary, I'm sure there were 15 Saudi janissaries waiting on him for a talk. And I could just imagine.
Ooh, good word, janissaries. Nicely played.
Well, thank you, sir. but really,
but yeah, I mean, oxygen. The idea that, you know, and the notion that they're floating their bullshit story now. He starts out yesterday, says, hey, maybe it was rogue actors. And so, you know, then there's the Saudis going, yeah, yeah, rogue actors, definitely rogue actors.
No, assassins.
Well, you know, how many?
I don't
know. Maybe you know. Maybe when you traveled, you always traveled with a bone saw. I didn't.
Mm-mm. No, didn't need
bone. You know, when bone saws are outlawed, only outlaws will have bone saws.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess the mafia probably. That's one of their techniques for people who. Stray from the path, or it used to be. That's what they love to do. And, you know, I heard from somewhere that the remains were placed in the sea or something like that. And I just can't imagine how the horror of that entire situation in an embassy, or anywhere, but in an embassy particularly. I mean, what had this man done to make them feel that hatred toward him?
Well, again, we're talking Jim, we're talking about barbarians. And whatever the culture, a central tenet of authoritarian barbarianism is, and I know you know the phrase, lèse majesté.
Yes, 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 I do.
So... Jamal Khashoggi had written critically of the Saudi government's repressive tendencies. And that constitutes, in their barbaric minds, a form of lèse majesté.
Oh, yeah.
And so that is sufficient to get you dead, as far as they're concerned.
I wonder what his business would have been in the Saudi embassy. I don't think I would have been going there. I don't think I would have gone anything near the diplomatic property of Saudi Arabia if I were this man.
Yeah, and by the way, both Irish Dave and Asa pointed out, Asa said the rogue killer in Trump's Saudi comments is the same 400-pound guy who hacked the DNC from his grandma's basement. Irish Dave said, I heard that the rogue killers in Jersey weigh 400 pounds. Great minds think alike. Ron and Raleigh, on the other hand, said, the fucking Saudis are chicken shit barbarians as long as they can bomb and kill from afar, but they will not put boots on the ground anywhere. I always take a bone saw to an interrogation, don't you? Yeah. And by the way, Robert wrote in from Australia to answer your question about the Great Barrier Reef.
Okay.
Half the reef is dead. And it runs the length runs the length of the Queensland coast. It's dead. And the biggest coal mine in the world is going ahead, but jobs and money. And of course, it's largely coal that's killed the reef.
Right. And did you hear that thing about the minister of nationalities or something like that? Or
the Indigenous Affairs Minister, yeah.
You're talking about white people?
It's okay to be white.
Yeah, I thought to myself, what the fuck?
Well, you might. So here's some background on that. Robert got the rest of the broadcast a little bit later yesterday, and I had written the story. It's about Pauline Hanson. She's the one who offered up the racist "It's okay to be white" bill. And Robert wrote in and said, "I'm listening to the second half of the program in delay. Fucking Pauline Hanson, that woman." And this is background. This is important for the rest of us. That woman has been a pain in the arse since she started in Parliament back in the 1990s. First, she was drumming up hate for Native Australians. They get too much free stuff. Then she was drumming up hate for Asian immigrants. Go back where you came from. Now she's drumming up hate for Muslims. She wore a full burqa into the Senate. She's in the Senate, which is where failed politicians who can't make it in the lower house run next. It's a sweet deal if you can survive a few elections. Sadly, there are enough old dinosaurs in outback Queensland who think it's 1950 to keep her in office. As background, she started, and there are quotation marks around this, Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party, unquote. And yes, Robert says, it's actually called that. It's not the One Nation Party, it's Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. It had a little success initially, then infighting caused it to implode with all the main people ending up hating each other. She faded away for a while and then reappeared a few years back. The current affairs programs love her here because she always pulls in the ratings. People tune in to see what new crazy shit she's come up with. I wouldn't be surprised if It's Okay to Be White was nothing more than a stunt to get herself some publicity. And as far as I know, she's never, ever done anything of worth during her times in Parliament. I just wish, well, Robert says, she'd retire and go away.
Well, yeah, those are the kind of people who stay there the longest. And, you know, any kind of publicity, they love it. As Trump says, there's no such thing as bad publicity. As long as it's got somebody's attention, it'll serve some part of my psyche or behavior or explanation of saying in some way, in another area, another facet of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But anyway, tonight when I saw all this stuff on the evening news about Trump and then just carrying on and calling the woman horse face and then her lawyer gets over
there. He's just trash.
Just trash. I'm serious. It's just like you were.
It's been one long running episode of WrestleMania ever since he came down that goddamn escalator. Ever since he came down that goddamn escalator with all of those with all those people he'd paid to be there to cheer him on. That's why he talks about paid protesters, because he pays people to cheer for him. About half of the people on his Twitter list, half of his followers. Well, hell, they're not real. They're bought followers.
Of course.
He's trash.
You know, I think within a few days of that incident, I was on your program, and I said, I'm afraid not only will that son of a bitch get the nomination, but he'll get elected. And I just had this horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. And I made the mistake of talking to my sister about it. Oh, you're not voting for Trump? And I said, I really have to go. You have a good day. And because I wasn't about to get into anything with her about it.
No, that would have been a slog through hell. Hey, Jim, we got to roll out of here, my friend. I hope you have yourself a good evening. And keep them honest over there. And don't let them drive any needles with 10-penny nails.
No. I'll tell you what, it's the first time I've ever not minded having blood being drawn. Think about that.
That says something for his skill.
It does indeed.
All right, you take care, Jim. Have a good evening.
Like I say, he brightens the day. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, later. And that's our buddy Jim calling from the hospital. Let's see. So we're at 2 minutes before the hour. We got $160 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. So unless something changes, we will be at $360 tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. And I'm looking at another story here. We're going to have to go into this innocent until proven guilty business. Because the guy who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has no idea where or how that concept fits into our body politic. And it damn sure doesn't apply to fucking death squads ordered up by a bunch of goddamn barbarians in Saudi Arabia. Not even a little bit. I bet Trump doesn't even acknowledge that 15 out of the 19 hijackers on 9/11 were Saudis. because you might remember that the Saudi royal house assured the United States that none of the hijackers were Saudis in the immediate aftermath of that day that will live in infamy. And apparently, you are not allowed to speak to Jared Kushner if you happen to be on the same plane with him. Remind me, and we'll go into that tomorrow. A Secret Service agent assaulted a journalist. I guess the journalist is lucky the Secret Service agent didn't have a fucking bone saw. But, yeah, he assaulted a Secret Service agent when a journalist turned on his phone and was trying to ask Jared Kushner a question on a flight. Upon being shown the journalist's credentials, the Secret Service agent said, "I don't give a damn who you are." And then covered up the video. Covered up the lens of the cell phone. Yeah. I don't give a damn who you are. There's a time and place. And I guess in Trump's fascist America, the Secret Service decides what the time is and what the place is. That low-life, anti-constitutional, anti-American prick needs to be fired. They're there to protect precious Jared and precious Ivanka, not prevent them from being asked questions. Errol Barnett was the journalist in question with CBS News. He's the D.C. correspondent. Well, I guess now Jared and precious Ivanka will have to fly charters because there are journalists out there. Sickening. All right. Well, we will be back for prayer meeting Wednesday, and I got prayer meeting Wednesday stuff already waiting. So I hope you'll join in. Thank you again for all your support. Thank you for meeting Charlene's challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, John, for jumping in this evening. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks to all of you who join in this little ongoing conversation and sharing parts of your precious finite lives with the rest of the community. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky over in the chat room. And thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.